Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI. Welcome back to the Deep Dive. Today we are digging into a real giant of medieval literature, a book that's kind of essential for historians, but also honestly reads like this epic, sometimes brutal soap opera, Jean Froissart's The Chronicles.
It really is. If you, the listener, want to get inside the 14th century, not some cleaned up version, but the messy, turbulent reality for us art is your guide. It's probably the most comprehensive and, well, vivid account we have of that time.
Definitely focusing on that huge conflict, the Hundred Years' War between England and France.
Exactly. And the whole thing is buzzing with this core tension, which is why I think it still speaks to us. It's all about chivalry.
Right. That medieval code, moral, religious, social, demanding honor, loyalty, piety, courtesy. All those ideals.
Mm-hmm. And Froissart basically helps us unpack this puzzle. How did a society that defined itself by this incredibly high-minded code actually operate day to day, especially when faced with, you know, brutal politics, constant warfare, betrayals?
So it's like a window into how ideals clash with reality.
Yeah.
A shortcut to understanding the medieval mindset, maybe.
That's a great way to put it. A shortcut into their whole way of thinking.
Okay, so let's get to know the man behind the book. Jean Froissart, born around 1337 in Valenciennes, which is in the Low Countries.
And importantly, he wasn't just some scholar tucked away. He was a cleric, yes, but also a poet and, crucially, a historian who was very much involved in the world he wrote about.
He wasn't detached?
Not at all. His secret weapon was access. He actively sought out and served powerful patrons. The big one, especially early on, was Queen Philippa of Hainault.
Who was married to King Edward III of England.
Precisely. So that put him right at the heart of the English court, right at the start of the war during that period of, well, famous English victories.
Okay, that's incredible access. But I have to ask, serving the English queen, doesn't that immediately suggest a bit of a pro-English slant? Especially in the early parts, did he, you know, acknowledge that or try to balance it later?
That's a really important question. And yes, the early work definitely celebrates English successes. But what makes him fascinating and why people call him a proto-journalist is his method. He knew he needed credibility.
So he didn't just rely on his patron's perspective.
No, he traveled extensively all over Western Europe, England, France, Scotland, Flanders. He went where the action was or where the people who saw the action were.
He was chasing the story.
He really was. He based his authority on gathering firsthand accounts. He actually interviewed knights, nobles, diplomats, people who were eyewitnesses to battles and treaties.
So he was doing oral history, basically.
In a way, yes. Crowdsourcing history, almost. And here's the other key part. He was a poet by training. That background gave him the skill to turn all this information, these interviews, into really dramatic, compelling narratives. It wasn't just dry facts, it was storytelling. He knew history had to grab you.
That definitely explains the sheer scale of the Chronicles. It's huge, covering, what, nearly 80 years, from about 1322 up to 1400. It feels panoramic.
It is. And we need to remember who he was writing for. This wasn't meant for everyone. It was explicitly aimed at the educated nobility and the clergy.
Ah, okay. So its purpose was specific.
Very. He says it himself. It's meant to be a memorial to the honorable and noble adventures of feats of arms. But it's also kind of an instruction manual.
How so?
It served as a guide for young nobles on how to conduct themselves, how to be chivalrous, how to behave at court, how to act honorably in battle, even in defeat.
So if you were a young lord back then, this was your history lesson, your code of conduct, and your inspiration all rolled into one book.
Exactly. Which is why you get not just the big battles and the diplomacy, but also all the details about tournaments, feasts, court ceremonies, the whole aristocratic lifestyle.
But it's not just celebrating it, is it? You mentioned the clash earlier.
Right. That's where the real depth comes in. He shows this world where reputation, honor, valor, these were incredibly important. But he constantly bumps up against the contradictions. What happens when the chivalric ideal, which asks for mercy, runs into a political situation that seems to demand, well, ruthlessness or betrayal?
That tension is what makes it feel real, I suppose.
Definitely.
Now, the work is usually divided into four books, right? Reflecting maybe his sources or patrons changing over time.
That's generally how it's looked at, yeah. Book I really kicks things off focusing on those early conflicts up to about 1356, and this is where we see that big shift in warfare.
The English military revolution, people call it.
Mm-hmm. Froissart documents the dynastic reasons for the war. Edward III claiming the French throne, but the really groundbreaking stuff is military. He details how English tactics changed the game. It wasn't about knights in shining armor winning the day anymore, not solely.
It was about combined arms.
Exactly. Yeah. Particularly the longbowmen working with dismounted knights and men-at-arms. And the prime example, the one everyone remembers, is the Battle of Crecy in 1346.
Froissart gives an amazing account of that, doesn't he?
It's
like you're there, you see the French knights, proud, maybe a bit arrogant, charging in these sort of chaotic ways.
Relying on traditional chivalric valor, expecting to sweep the field.
And then they run into the English lines, disciplined formations, often commoners with those devastating longbows.
It was military pragmatism versus chivalric idealism face to face. And pragmatism, well, it won big time. But even out of this, Froissart finds his heroes, like Edward, the Black Prince.
Right, he becomes the model knight in book one, doesn't he? Brave, skilled, but also courteous to his prisoners, embodying that chivalric ideal even amidst the new warfare.
He's presented as the epitome of knightly virtue in that early phase.
But the Chronicles doesn't just stay in that heroic mode. The later books, especially 10th and the 3rd, they start to show the cracks, right? A darker side merges.
Definitely. The gloss starts to wear off. Even though Froissart clearly believes history is driven by kings and nobles, the reality of social upheaval forces its way in. He has to record things like the peasant revolts.
The Jacquerie in France and Wat Tyler's rebellion in England.
Yes. And this is where his own background, his aristocratic bias, becomes really, really clear.
How does he describe these uprisings? Because these were desperate people, often pushed too far.
Well, let's just say he doesn't show much sympathy. They're consistently portrayed as basically a savage, irrational mob. He recounts what happened, the violence, the eventual brutal suppression. But the framing is always that crushing them was necessary. It was restoring the God-given natural order.
So for us reading it now, it's a stark reminder of whose voices usually got recorded and whose didn't.
Absolutely. A lesson in perspective. Mm. And there's another element in these middle books that really undermines the chivalric gloss. The free companies.
The mercenaries. What was their story?
Basically, during truces or lulls in the main war, these bands of professional soldiers, men from all nations, didn't just pack up and go home. They were unemployed.
So they kept fighting.
They formed their own independent armies, effectively, and just lived off the land, terrorizing regions, especially in France. They weren't fighting for a king or for honor anymore. They were fighting purely for profit. For loot.
Which must have completely clashed with the whole idea of chivalric warfare being this noble contest between equals fighting for higher ideals.
Precisely.
Yeah.
It professionalized war in a very brutal, mercenary way, and it highlighted something crucial. Chivalry, as an actual code of conduct, mostly applied between nobles, the common folk. They were largely unprotected from these predatory bands.
Wow. So the ideals had limits. Big ones.
Very big ones.
Yeah. And then we get to book four, the final stretch. Covering roughly 1389 to 1400. And the tone shifts again, doesn't it? It feels more somber.
Definitely somber. There's a real sense that the world Froissart initially celebrated is fading. The focus moves away from glorious battles and more towards, well, shady court politics and intrigue.
And the climax, really, is the whole drama around King Richard II of England being deposed by his cousin, Henry Bolingbroke, who becomes Henry IV.
Yes. Froissart treats Richard's downfall as this profound tragedy. It really hits him hard.
Why was it such a big deal for him? I mean, kings were overthrown.
For Froissart, it was more than just politics. It was a violation of the sacred order. Richard was the anointed king, chosen by God in that worldview. Henry's usurpation, driven by ambition and political maneuvering, represented the ultimate triumph of, you know, cold, hard expediency, real politic over divine right and sacred honor.
So it symbolized the end of that chivalric era he admired so much.
In many ways, yes. It felt like the final nail in the coffin for that idealized world. Pragmatism and power politics had won out completely.
Okay, so pulling back from the narrative, what are the big takeaways, the key themes that still resonate today? You mentioned the paradox of chivalric honor earlier.
Yeah, that's central. Froissart shows again and again how this code could inspire truly noble acts, incredible generosity to a captured enemy, keeping one's word against all odds, but...
What could also be a liability.
Exactly. Sometimes sticking rigidly to a point of honor, maybe refusing to retreat when it was tactically necessary, or insisting on a formal battle when guerrilla tactics would work better, that adherence to principle could lead straight to disaster. It's a timeless tension between ideals and practical outcomes.
Then there's the personal nature of medieval politics. We tend to think of states and national interests now, but Froissart really shows how much things turned on individuals.
Completely. Major wars, alliances, feuds, they often boil down to personal relationships between rulers, dynastic marriages, old family grudges, or just the sheer charisma, or lack thereof, of a king like Edward III. Personalities drove history in a very direct way.
And connected to that, maybe, is the sense of fortuna, or fortune, the idea that things are unpredictable.
Yes, that's a strong undercurrent. The medieval worldview was deeply aware of how unpredictable life was, how quickly fortunes could turn. Events were often seen as being subject to forces beyond human control, God's will, or just blind luck. It gives the stories of fallen kings and defeated heroes this layer of tragic grandeur.
Almost like Greek tragedy.
A little bit, yeah. And finally, amidst all the focus on noble families and dynasties, you start to see the first hints of something else. A nascent sense of national identity.
Really? Even though loyalty was mainly to your lord or king?
Yeah, it's subtle. But after decades of brutal, prolonged war between the English and French, you start to see comments creeping in. Froissart records moments where nobles on one side basically say, you know, those people, the English or the French, we're just fundamentally different. We'll never truly understand or love each other.
So the shared experience of conflict started forging a sense of us versus them.
Yeah.
That went beyond just loyalty to a particular ruler.
It seems to be the beginning of it, yes. The seeds of modern national consciousness, perhaps, being sown in the battlefield mud.
Froissart wasn't just a historian. He was a fantastic writer. And some of his observations just stick with you. Let's share a few key ideas or quotes.
Well, his core belief really shines through in lines that capture the essence of chivalry. Something like, honored be he who honors chivalry. For through it are maintained justice and loyalty, courtesy, prowess, and all good customs. For him, it was the bedrock of a functioning noble society.
And his method, that proto-journalism we talked about, you can see his justification in ideas like, there is no man so wise that he can know all things, nor so foolish that he knows nothing profitable.
Right. It's this underlying belief that you need multiple perspectives, even seemingly humble ones, to get closer to the truth. That's why he traveled and talked to so many different people.
And then there's just the sheer power of his descriptions, that famous line about the Battle of Crecy describing the English arrows.
Oh, yeah, it's unforgettable. Paraphrased, it's something like, the arrows flew so holy and so thick that it seemed as snow. You can just picture it, can't you?
Yeah.
That visual sensory detail makes the history leap off the page.
It really does. So thinking about all this, how can we apply these lessons from the 14th century today? What are the real-life applications?
Well, one clear one is about leadership and reputation. Froissart shows leaders like Edward III succeeding not just through force, but through what we'd now call soft power. Building a reputation for integrity, for keeping your word, for being generous even to opponents sometimes.
So character matters as much as strategy.
Absolutely. That kind of reputation, that personal brand, can be more valuable in the long run than just being ruthless for short-term gain. Consistency and integrity build trust.
And building on that idea of ideals versus reality, the second application seems to be understanding the gap between ideals and reality in any system.
Exactly. The Chronicles is all about celebrating chivalry, this high ethical code. But then on the very next page, you might read about a brutal massacre or a cynical betrayal.
It's like the difference between a company's mission statement on the wall and what actually happens under pressure in the marketplace.
Precisely. It teaches us to be aware of that constant tension between stated values and the pressures of competition, ambition, and just, well, human nature.
And maybe the most relevant today, given how much information we're bombarded with, is the lesson in critical reading and bias recognition.
Definitely. Because Froissart, maybe unintentionally, gives us a masterclass in this. His biases, his admiration for the aristocracy, his initial pro-English stance, his dismissal of commoners, they're often right there on the surface.
He's not hiding it, really.
Yeah, not really. And that forces us, the modern reader, to constantly ask those crucial questions. Who is telling the story? Who paid for it? Whose perspective is being foregrounded? And just as importantly, whose is being left out or silenced?
That skill is vital for navigating, well, everything today. From news reports to social media, understanding the narrator's position.
It really is. Froissart teaches us that history isn't just what happened, it's about who gets to shape the narrative and why.
So wrapping things up, what's the one thing that really stood out for you from this deep dive? What did you love most?
For me, it's just how incredibly human the whole thing feels. Despite the centuries, the armor, the different social structures, you recognize the same ambitions, the same desires for honor, the same fears, the same capacity for both incredible nobility and shocking cruelty. Mm. It's a vibrant, messy, profoundly human window into a world that feels distant, but also strangely familiar. It shows how much human nature stays consistent.
That's really well put. For me, what stands out is that the Chronicles is maybe less a straightforward history book in our modern sense, and more of an immersion into the mindset, the core beliefs, the founding myths, you could say, of the ruling class of that era.
It's about their worldview. Exactly. Its lasting value, I think, is in showing us almost in real time how a powerful ideology, in this case, chivalry, is constructed, how it's used to justify social order, how it shapes people's actions, and then, inevitably, how it starts to fray and decay when it slams into the hard edges of political reality. It's a case study in the life cycle of an ideology.
See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Ekatra Foundation.